pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. It is Monday. Everybody's favorite day of the week. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You need to be in touch with the program. Hit us up on that text line and, we'll respond. Coming up on today's program, State Representative Shane Stringer here in about 30 minutes. One of our semi-regulars on Mondays. Dale Jackson, WVNN and Yellowhammer News in the 10 o'clock hour. Then the 11 o'clock hour, a couple of guests you probably wouldn't expect to hear on the Mobile Radio Show. Jerick Wilkins, who's running for the 6th Congressional District up in near Birmingham. He's running against Gary Palmer, who, we can talk about that in a moment here, but he wanted to get on, and I'll tell you about I want to talk about term limits today and, it's almost of a fascination with term limits. But that's coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, the big topic, I guess, if you will, with that 6th Congressional District. And we can spend a little time on that. And finally, she's a city councilwoman in Vestavia Hills up in near Birmingham as well. But she's in Iowa for the Iowa caucus. She's, I think, working on behalf of Ron DeSantis and wanted to talk about her experience in Iowa spending the last, several weeks up there working for DeSantis. But Kimberly Cook, she's the wife of Alabama Supreme Court Justice Greg Cook, but is giving a speech tonight at one of the caucuses. And I just thought it'd be kind of an interesting discussion to see what that experience is like, since it's completely completely alien to most of us here. What a way to have to go through the presidential process. But she'll be with us in that 11 o'clock hour as well. And once again, text line 251-343-0106 will be in touch with the program. Happy Iowa Caucus Day, by the way. I know we've been waiting for this day all year long. It's like a second Christmas to a lot of you. Okay, so I kid. It's sort of more anticlimactic. Iowa caucus. We know who's going to win. There's no real Democrat caucus. And obviously the Republican is very, very, very leaning very hard for Trump. Significant in this, though, depending on how DeSantis does, this may be it. This may be the end of the line for Ron DeSantis. I mean, if it is abysmal. We talked about this last week. Well, the weather, you never know. It's a wild card. I mean, I'll be honest. I think it helps Trump. Who's going to, are you going to go trudge through the frozen tundra of the cornfields of Iowa or whatever the it looks like there to go play in the Iowa caucus if you know your guy's going to get smoked? Well, like a last minute poll here showing Trump with like a 40-point lead. And it just does not, despite what the media are doing. Now, the media, they sell this, and they expect people to really tune in, and it's a democracy 2024. And we'll soon get like Steve Kornacki and Rachel Maddow, pontificating on what this all means. But I think we know Trump's probably going to win. Will he get a majority? Now, delegates are awarded on a proportionate basis. It's not a winner-take-all state. So this is why you see if a candidate who is supposed to do well in New Hampshire, say, does well in Iowa, Iowa, despite John McCain not winning in Iowa in 2008, it went to Mike Huckabee. It really jump started his campaign, because he was, you know, always kind of a last place guy. And then he was expected to do well in New Hampshire, but he comes in second in Iowa. And then next thing you know, he is the nominee. On the other hand, really kind of poor showing from Giuliani, and who put all his eggs in the Florida basket in that cycle. But anyway, Iowa was significant in that, and it always never necessarily produces the ultimate winner of the nomination on the Republican side. If you go back to the last three, Ted Cruz, the last three competitive ones, Ted Cruz in 2016, Rick Santorum in 2012, and then the aforementioned Mike Huckabee in 2008. So a lot of media excitement. I know that the last Iowa caucus that was focused on Democrats did not go well. They had some kind of app that wasn't functioning, and they couldn't get the results reported, and they tried to be high tech. You guys remember the Iowa caucus in 2020? It was the same night as the State of the Union, where Nancy Pelosi took the copy of the State of the Union address and ripped it in half. Can you believe it's been that long? But we'll see where this heads. It's 4 years ago, but I don't know. It just seems that Trump has a big advantage for two reasons. Well, he's just Trump, and he's the incumbent president, but his support is so much more enthusiastic, regardless of, you know, what you see online and the online chatter. And he is more likely to be, his supporters are more likely to, I think, go through the rigors of the weather to go and caucus for him. I mentioned this a minute ago. There's a congressional race. It's not as competitive as AL1 or 2. But in the 6th congressional district, so let's go back to 2014, and longtime Congressman Spencer Baucus left halfway through his term. Remember, it was kind of a bumpy year. 2014 was Bonner had left office, and then Baucus leaves office, and it opened up this special election cycle up there. And it came down to the current congressman, Gary Palmer, and someone you hear on this show quite frequently, Paul DeMarco, for the Republican nod in that seat. And it obviously, it being such a Republican seat, it didn't take much for, you win the Republican nomination, you're pretty much a lock to be the next congressman for that district. Well, at the time, Gary Palmer made a what is perceived to be a term limit pledge. Now, I believe there's some confusion. Was it a term limit pledge, or was it a pledge to support term limits? And then finally, on Saturday, I was at an event up in Birmingham in Jefferson County, and Palmer just acknowledged that, yeah, I made the pledge. And this would have been it for him. This term he is currently serving would have been the end of the road. He wouldn't have ran again. He wouldn't have run for re-election if he had fulfilled his pledge. But he is running again for Congress, and a couple of his two opponents in that race, I think he's still by far and away the prohibitive favorite up there. He's probably going to be reelected. But and one of those we have coming on here in the 11 o'clock hour, and it came up. You made a promise. You made a pledge. Now you're not running. Long story short, Palmer said, well, yeah, I made the pledge, and it was a really difficult decision for me, but I felt like there's more for me to do. Now, so I just picture this. Palmer was the head of the Alabama Policy Institute. And I'm telling you guys, he went up there with a very naive, very idealistic view of Washington and what Congress does and how it should be. He got up there. John Boehner was Speaker. And he confronts Boehner, says, I can't support you for Speaker. I made that pledge to my constituents. And Boehner says, well, Congressman Palmer, you will be on no committees. You will not be a part of the process. That is how this works. So for those first year and a half or so, until the House Freedom Caucus ousted Boehner and we got Paul Ryan, I mean, Palmer was kind of persona non grata up there with Republican leadership. So he went from that to today, right now, as we speak, he is the fourth ranking Republican member in the House of Representatives. It's obviously Speaker Johnson, then Majority Leader Scalise, and then the Republican Conference Chairwoman, Elise Stefanik, and then Gary Palmer, because he is the House Policy Committee Chairman. Now, I mean, maybe that doesn't mean a whole lot. It's maybe more fourth-ranking Republican kind of symbolically. They're much more powerful committee chairman. He can make things happen. But on the roster, on the power, on the depth chart, he's the fourth-ranking Republican. And he doesn't think this is the time to go. He's like, look, well, look where I am, the highest-ranking Republican in the caucus. Although I would probably argue you probably put Rogers as House Armed Services Committee Chairman and Adderholt above him just because Adderholt has a spot on appropriations. But in theory, at least, Palmer's fourth-ranking Republican. And he's, you know, he's got some big things. He got a big Northern Belt line or whatever up in Birmingham he wants to see completed. And he claims he wants to work alongside Trump. So he's running again for Congress. So anyway, long story short, he is running and he is acknowledging this, violating a term limit pledge. The whole term limit pledge discussion, I mean, like, I don't know. Term limits in general, I'm very down on it. A lot of you are like, well, you got to go and put term limits in and it'll help drain the swamp. Let me tell you all a secret, though. Knowing something a little bit about government, Congress has power. But the real power in Washington, D.C. that impacts your life directly is in the bureaucracy. That's an executive level function. And we're never going to put term limits on like the paper pushers at the Department of Commerce or Energy or Agriculture or wherever. Now, you have term limits on the president. And all these bureaucrats serve at his pleasure. However, it's not as if this is like, that's really what's going on. Maybe it impacts leadership. Maybe it impacts the high ranking people, but the people kind of in aggregate all run the federal government. And my argument is this. Now, judicial appointments in the federal government are life appointments. It seems like you have career civil servant who are somewhat lifers. Why would you want to hamstring the only, aside from the President of the United States, the only other elected, accountable to the people, branch of government with a term limit if you want to counter the other two branches of government? 251-343-0106. Text me. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Sleep tight, darling, and close your pretty brown eyes. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Happy Caucus Day, as caucus goers are about to go slug it through the snow and the ice to go caucus, is the verb form of it, caucus for their candidate. 251-343-0106 will be a touch of the program. So back to my finish this thought. Term limits. I think you need. I don't know that, you know. And the example I use, I wrote this for Land Yap. Jabbo Wagner in the Alabama State Senate was first elected to the legislature in the House. Was elected in 1966. And in like 86, he is now in still in the Senate. He was in the Alabama legislature when Lyndon Johnson was president, guys. So like that would be like your textbook case. Maybe term limits would be wise or whatever. But what happens in like Florida has term limits for the legislature, and then what, they just take a term off and then go run again? Or well, what it really does in Florida is a lot of times a family member will run for that when the term limit expires, will run for be the member for a term, and then daddy or whoever comes back and runs again and gets to start all over. But anyway, it's an imperfect idea to impose term limits. So I'm telling you, you want somebody with a little seasoning to take on a bureaucracy that will not be term limited. Now let's term limit the bureaucracy, but you can't do that. I mean, these people have livelihoods and jobs. I mean, you can't term limit like a park ranger or something. But you know, if you can't do it for the park ranger, then what about the high ranking DOJ official? Right? Like, why were there two sets of rules here? So there lies the rub. What do you do? How do you? And I think your only counterbalance to that is having the system we have in place. And besides, if you really think your member's been in Congress or the legislature or wherever too long, you just vote them out. But this, the term limit thing, I understand it. A guy like Richard Shelby comes in and he's able to raise a bunch of money, and it makes it impossible for anybody to run against him. It does. I mean, that's just the practical, you know, like way of ensuring your member for life is to build up a war chest. And if you should have to use whatever in your war chest, Shelby did in 2016, you just empty it out and smear your opponent or whatever. And it's only enabled by somebody who has been in the legislature forever to accumulate such resources. But I think if somebody's bad enough, well, let's just say this. I mean, whatever the advertising or whatever is used to get out the vote, to get a candidate a victory, a W, I mean, it still can be defeated at the ballot box. If you're a believer in direct democracy, this is the closest thing to it. And I understand it, the term limit argument in theory, but in practice in 2024, where government has grown so much it's just a different world where term limits, you know, all things equal, aren't maybe the best thing. Let's go to the text line here. Reminder, and I apologize, I haven't done this as much as I wanted to. There tonight, there is a forum. I believe it begins at 5 o'clock at the Marriott over there by the Bel Air Mall for Republican candidates. Everybody should be there. AL1, AL2, all the statewide candidates. So they're encouraging you to come out and check that out if you're so interested. Well, there are a bunch of your texts to get to. We'll get to those in due course. Stay tuned. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Still to come, Dale Jackson in about an hour. AL6 Republican hopeful Derek Wilkins in the 11 o'clock hour. And Kimberly Cook, wife of Alabama Supreme Court Justice Greg Cook, is going to be with us calling in from Iowa. If you're so interested, real quick, y'all heard me talking about this in the last segment, but just a reminder, the MECREC Mobile County Republican Executive Committee candidate forum tonight. Here are the specifics, Mobile Marriott Ballroom. It's at 3101 Airport Boulevard. At 5 to 6 is the meet and greet, and the forum starts at 6 PM. So, maybe, hopefully, some of you can make it out. Looks like we got two congressional races. Candidates will be there. Both Supreme Court justice candidates. A number of criminal and civil appeals court candidates. We got locally circuit court, district court judges. Mobile County Commissioner District 2 candidates will be there. And then, let's see, license commissioner, circuit clerk, and District 1, Mobile County School Board. So that's at the Marriott tonight, starting at 5 p.m. Those are the specifics if you're interested in that. All right, let's get to our next guest. Always a pleasure to bring on my friend, State Representative Shane Stringer is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Well, we're gearing up here. I know you're just chomping at the bit to get back to Montgomery. Yeah.
It's
going to
be interesting.
Interesting is a nice way of putting it. I guess everybody's kind of caught up in the gambling discussion. Is that, you really see that leading the way? Is that going to, what looks like is going to be front and center first off? Or are we gonna have to wait a little bit deeper into the session to start seeing some action on that?
It's hard to say, but I mean, personally, I would expect it to come up probably near the beginning of the session and go ahead and tackle it and see what we can do with it. You know, we've brought it up every year that I've been there. So I think this year it has more of an option or more of an opportunity to come up and maybe even get out. You know, I know the constituents in my district want to vote on it. And, you know, I think it's time that we give them that option.
Well, and what I can't get a read on now, I mean, I spent time at Lee kind of going through the Senate, but there's only 35 members upstairs. It's hard to get a read on where you guys are downstairs. And I got to get you to talk about that. I mean, do you think there is the appetite, especially with all these new members? Now, Speaker Ledbetter's proven success. He's been successful in getting votes. That first year, do you think it's going to be, do you think there's that possibility, or, you know, do you see a path forward in the House?
It's hard to say. I've not really, you know, got to know a lot of the new members yet and kind of get a feel for them and you know, their, I guess their priorities or whatever. But, you know, I think the speaker and leadership's been meeting with the new members and just kind of going over and briefing them on everything and trying to get them up to speed and where things have been and where they're going with the gaming. And so I think they'll have a good opinion. I guess at the end of the day, it'll come back to what their constituents want in their areas. You know, I think a lot of them are going to be open to the idea from the ones that I've spoken to. But, you know, it's really hard to say until we get in there. You know, after this session, I'll have probably a better idea and kind of get to know a lot of the new members and get a feel for where they stand and you know, kind of what they are looking at.
Where are you on it these days? Do you have strong feelings on it, or are you just kind of wait and see?
I want to see the bill first. You know, that's always a priority for me. You want to read and kind of see what the bill is, where the money goes, and you know, what all is involved in it to make sure that we're not, I guess, favoring one area of the state over the other. You know, down here on the south end of the state, I feel like we get left out a little bit sometimes. So, you know, as you know, I deal with this Highway 45 issue, and I've been dealing with that since I've been there. And you know, they're paving 4-lane and roads all over the state. Haven't been able to accomplish much with 45. So I want to stand up, make sure that our district's getting representative, and not just my district, but South Alabama, and make sure we're not getting left out.
Well, and then I don't think there's any appetite on my side of the bay for casino gambling anywhere within Baldwin County. I mean, there's a good possibility, especially out there at the dog track, of having something, some sort of casino gaming in Mobile County. What's your read of the temperature there? Do you think people would want a casino in Mobile County anywhere?
Yeah, I think they would. You know, I think that it would probably potentially help generate some new economic growth in Mobile or South Mobile County. You know, I have spoken with the representatives from Baldwin County, and they have, you know, and then even my constituents in North Baldwin, and they've told me that they're not interested in a casino in Baldwin County. You know, they're already overcrowded and everything with our beaches and the summer traffic and everything that we're already dealing with. So I definitely understand and get where they're coming from, but there are areas in the state that probably could use this and potentially help, you know, spawn some growth in their areas.
Well, it's a unique kind of economic growth, and it's just not something for everybody, right? That some places in Alabama would welcome it with open arms, and then you have, I think, a handful of places are very not in my backyard. Stay away. We don't really want the kind of, you know, blight or whatever that casino gaming might bring to your community.
And that's exactly right. That's, you know, like, you know, I've heard constituents and, you know, in Baldwin County, and they're like, man, we can't even hardly go to a store. It's so crowded over here now. We definitely don't need that or want that in our area. So, you know, that's an option. You know, where on the opposite side, on North Mobile County, West Mobile, they are interested in it and do want a chance to vote on it. So, you know, I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what we should do, is give the citizens the option to vote on it. And if they choose to pass it, then so be it. If they choose not to, then they'll get what they want.
Well, and maybe, you know, for our listeners, they hear me go on and on and on about it, but it is a 3/5 majority, right? And that's not as necessarily easily attainable. That there's going to have to be some horse trading, or it's going to take at least some Democrats to go along with the Republican leadership if this is what they want, right?
Absolutely. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised if leadership and the governor and no telling who else is probably already meeting with the Democrats trying to work out something to gain some support on that side of the aisle if they want this passed. But I have not seen or heard that, but you know, that's just the way the game works.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. Representative, and talking to some of your colleagues, maybe more of the conservative variety, if you will, they think that there's a possibility that they may try to get Democrats to come on board. They may try to sneak in and maybe not call it this outright, but some kind of Medicaid expansion or whatever it may be. But are they gonna? Do you worry about that? Do you worry about it, that the powers that be wanting gambling done, that they're willing to add some sweeteners that may not necessarily be traditional Republican policy?
Absolutely. And that's why we say the devil's in the details. You know, you want to read the bill, you want to see the bill before you commit to vote on something, because, you know, who knows what could be put in it. You know, so it's always smart to read a bill and kind of go over it and go through it and see what you're looking at, and even other bills that are surrounding the session, just to kind of see what we are looking at and make sure that you're not committing to something like that. So, you know, it's I'm sure anything and everything will be discussed in surrounding this, and you know, there'll be a lot of negotiations and everything, like with every bill. You know, it's you know, my constitution carry bill, the permitless carry bill, we had to work hard to make that happen. And, you know, there were some sacrifices in there, but at the end of the day, you know, we came out with a good bill. So, you know, I think that, there'll be a lot of talks, and, you know, who knows what we'll see, but we'll just have to address that as it comes up, during the session.
And, I just, want to mention that you mentioned your constitutional carry bill. Here we are, some years into it here. It's not, we haven't gone down the path of, cats sleeping with dogs, end times and all the doom and gloom, that was suggested that would happen when you pass this thing by some. It does seem as if, it's pretty much the status quo. At least that's my read on it. What are you hearing about the end result of constitutional carry in Alabama?
It is just what we've said it was. It was not going to be any major changes. You know, like I've told everybody, I did my due diligence and did my homework before I carried this bill and sponsored it and spoke to sheriffs all over the country that had this legislation and law in place, and nothing major happened across the country. And it is the same here. You know, Alabama is the only state that stepped up and put some revenue in place to help the sheriffs and the counties out to deal with that. You know, but it just absolutely was not, you know, I don't know if there was just a false narrative being put out during that time by certain ones, or if that was truly their opinion. But, we've seen, you know, that crime has not gone out of control, and things are basically no different than they were before.
Well, and I would ask you this. It also hasn't, like, bankrupted a lot of sheriff's offices around the state either, has it?
It absolutely has not. You know, and like I said, Alabama, of course, you know, you listen to some of the sheriffs, they'll tell you that it has. But, you know, if they can prove their numbers, I can guarantee you they have not. But at the end of the day, you know, as we've said before, it is not the state legislature's job to support the sheriff's departments and fund the sheriff's departments. It is also not the law-abiding taxpayers that own guns' responsibility to support the sheriff's departments. And, you know, the legislature has been telling the sheriffs for years, many, many years, that they needed to get their finances in order and address that. That at some point this bill was coming, and they were going to have to, you know, find other avenues for revenue to support certain issues.
Well, that's my read on it exactly. It just, I think it's pretty clear what was going on there. Why did down here, Representative, talking about constitutional carry, are you personally pushing, I mean, what's going to be your big objective this session? Do you have anything that you're really getting behind?
I don't have any, you know, pressing bills that I'm looking at. I do have a few things I'm going to be taking care of. But, you know, right now I'm just kind of looking at the session, seeing what other bills are being brought. And, you know, I think we need to do something with our election integrity just to make sure that we keep that in place. And Secretary of State Wes Allen's brought a good bill to us last year, so I'm hoping that maybe we can try to push that through. You know, I'd like to see us put a good, strong school choice bill in place, and I hear that's a possibility. So, you know, looking at that, and then, you know, just trying to make sure that we're pumping out some good red meat Republican bills this session.
Well, because I was thinking the kill bill ballot harvesting, I mean, that's going to have to go pretty early, right? Because you have to have a 6-month window between a general election, or any election for that matter, and whatever changes you want to institute in the election system. And the other one, I think, is the Oliver bill with the divisive concepts. Those seem like two pretty standard issue layup type pieces of legislation.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that both of those come up. Both of those guys have worked really hard to put together some good legislation and a good bill. So no reason that we can't try to come out and address it and see what we can do with it.
Yeah, I guess the struggle is not maybe not necessarily the guys in your chamber, but as it goes sometimes upstairs, you have to wait and see what the Senate does on some of these things.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. You know, there's been certain bills that have been killed, you know, predominantly in the House, and then, you know, there's some in the Senate. And, you know, it seemed that the Senate passed the Constitution carry bill every year, and then the House killed it. So the last time that when we passed it, we got it out and then eventually got it through the Senate. So after working with them, so.
Well, let me add one more thing here, and this is just my observation, having watched the legislature, you know, over the last 6 or 7 years, but the transition from Speaker McCutcheon to Speaker Ledbetter, it does seem as if under Ledbetter, things kind of operate more on time, on schedule, and a lot more. Now, McCutcheon just had a different style, I guess, especially coming out of Hubbard, but that it is certainly a different operating practice underway in the House.
Yeah, it's different. You know, I think McCutcheon's tried to accommodate and tried to appease everybody and give them a piece of time to speak with him about different issues. And that created some time management issues within the House. And, you know, I think coming into the Speaker's election, that was probably one of the main issues or the main topics that, you know, people would talk with the different candidates that were running for Speaker. And, you know, so far since Speaker Ledbetter's came out, that's exactly what he's done. He's kept us on time and really done awesome with the time management aspect of it and keeping us very efficient so far.
Representative, we got to leave it there, but always appreciate our visits, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. State Representative Shane Stringer there. I get to hear him every other Monday on this program. Next week we'll have Jennifer Fiddler. And so you want to tune in for that. But we got to get a break in here. We will be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Flat. Promise me, son, not to do the things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can. Now, it won't mean you're weak if you turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Real quick before we go to the top of the hour here. Josh Boone, the guy I don't dislike him as much as probably a lot of people do. I got to know him a little bit. And he's been nice enough to me when he didn't have to be, and I'll leave it at that. But I can't let this one go. Moon writing in, used to be a sports columnist for the Montgomery Advertiser, and he was always down on Nick Saban. He wrote a column in 2006, right after, or no, 2007, April 2007, I believe. It drew a lot of attention. Even Paul Feinbaum, who at the time was still writing for the Press Register, talking about headlines, Saban's stingy media policies only hurting fans. And he goes on to kind of write about being over, I suggest he's overpaid. But he calls Nick Saban, who had just been hired by Alabama to run the football program, kind of he called him a media creation. He says, let's be real here. Nick Saban's reputation is mostly media, mostly hype. He was overrated at Michigan State, overrated at LSU, and rated about right in Miami. He's an average coach who, though most media attention, has garnered reputation of being a great coach, unquote. Well, you just say this. He did win a national championship at the LSU before bolting for the NFL. But Moon now, however, is very bullish on the now former Alabama football coach. He's wanting him to run against Tommy Tuberville. Now, there's no chance of that happening. Looks like Coach Saban is going to make off, make his way down to Jupiter, Florida, and go play golf with Tiger Woods or whatever. But 1819 News, 1819news.com has got the story up if you want to go back and reminisce about Josh Moon's musings about Nick Saban at the time of his hire. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Oh, so right.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two. Now officially underway 6 minutes after the hour. We are a little under 5 hours, or a little more than that. Real quick, Iowa caucus tonight, they're on Central Time, and some of the smaller caucuses, you'll start getting results in. I believe they begin at 7. I think we would go as late as midnight, but you ought to start seeing kind of an idea of where this is going by 9, 10 o'clock. The Trump folks are really, I think, feeling pretty good. The polling has him way, way out ahead of DeSantis and Haley. It's starting. The trend is not good for Ron DeSantis right now. And I think tonight's a make or break night, potentially, for Governor DeSantis. So we'll see. That it's 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Hit us up on that text line and let us know what is on your mind. We got a bunch of texts to get to here, as promised. So let's start getting to it. Paul, what percentage chance do you get Biden being on the ballot on Election Day? Pretty high. I think some of the fundraising numbers suggest as much. If people did not think that Joe Biden was going to be on the ballot in November, they wouldn't be giving money to him right now. And keep in mind, guys, the way sort of campaign donations work. I mean, it's not necessarily, hey, I really believe in this guy. He makes my heart flutter. I want him to be president. So I am going to write him a check. You know, it's an investment. It really is. It's an investment in the future. And a lot of times it's an investment in the future of your business. You want to be on the good side of the administration. So you write a campaign contribution. And right now, Biden is the guy. He's sort of rocking and rolling there. I wouldn't think that at this point, just based on where the money is heading, that Biden is going to be, there's going to be a last minute substitute for Biden, Paul. King of all named Texas, yes, to bureaucrats need limits. Maybe do them like the retailers do and cut the hours, part-time hours, and take away all those cushy full-time benefits. How do you do that and make the government function? Now, look, I know there's bloat and waste and just all kinds of awful things in the federal government, King. I don't think you could do that. It's just no one's going to want to work for the federal government on a part-time basis. People have got, despite them being civil servants, like, how do you tell the guy delivering your mail, the full-time postman, that he has to be part-time now? Or the head of the post office, or whatever. I mean, you know, just go down and you know, it becomes very complicated. The government does so much in your life. It plays such an outsized role in your life, King, that the bureaucracy, the civil servants, are really where the power lies. And that's just like term limiting them is just not a, it's not viable. It would be costly. You couldn't do it. It's not feasible in my mind. You tell me how And I'm not just talking about FBI agents and DEA agents and or IRS bureaucrats or whatever. I mean, who's going to be the who's going to run that national forest or whatever it may be? I mean, go down the list. I mean, think about everything the federal government does, and you want to term limit them. Well, we won't term limit those guys. Well, then who gets to make those decisions? See where we're going with this and how complicated it could get. You're just going to have an entrenched bureaucracy in the federal government. And I maintain the only counter, the best counter to that, that's directly responsive to the voters, to the people, to the citizens, is the legislative branch, who in some cases you get to elect every 2 years. So if you have a problem with the Social Security Administration and they're not getting the job done and they just flip you the bird whenever you go to them with a complaint, you could call your congressman. And they are at least thinking, well, I need to be reactive here because this might be a voter for me down the road. And I don't need a so you see, like, you can at least hold them accountable through that. Now, the other side of that is you want somebody who has been there, accrued a little time, to take on these guys head to head. Why can't the person, whoever it is, that represents you in the Congress, be that counter to the person under a term limit system? But, you know, you got to learn the tricks of the trade. You got to learn the rules of the road. I think in some ways you limit yourself when you term limit a elected official. I guess what I think is the real problem in Washington, it is a minor problem in the big scheme of things in the swamp. That is, members who've been on Capitol Hill for too long. The real problem lies on the other branch of government. John, we need campaign finance reform to prevent individuals from buying an office. Buying an office doesn't necessarily allow for the best person winning the office. But I don't understand that. Like, there's a degree of personal responsibility that all the money in the world shouldn't buy you an office. You still got to get out and work for it. Look at Alabama the last few cycles. And the best funded candidate doesn't always win. Jeff Coleman did not win in the 2nd Congressional District. A vastly underfunded Barry Moore beat him. Maybe that's the exception and not the rule. But just coming in with a bunch of money, I still think there's an element of getting your name out and having to work for it. Leo. Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Leo. Trump judge says he'll hold hearings on Fannie Willis fair claims. Your thoughts as a married to a lawyer? Well, the affair thing, I I don't know what, where was this tidbit? Where was this nugget 6 months ago when you needed it? If this derails the whole Fannie Willis thing, then you get the twofer, right? Trump gets to be portrayed as a martyr taking on a corrupt system in Atlanta, Georgia, in government, versus the getting a bump in the polls or whatever from being what I think is unfairly targeted by the criminal justice system at different levels of government. Somerdale Tony writes, you know how it is. You don't want term limits to affect your guy. It's the other idiots. Thanks for the clarity on term limits. I've been one of those guys who always said term limits. But now I get why not to. I appreciate that. I don't like the idea of taking away something from voters, Tony, that if I like my member of Congress, I can't keep him because somebody along the way said, you're not responsible enough to make that decision for yourself. We had to term limit the guy. And the other thing is these term limits were places, some of these states where they have term limits, it creates a weird sort of phenomenon of a member of the legislature, for example, serving his two terms, two consecutive terms, or whatever he or she is limited to, taking one term off, and usually the spouse or the a child or somebody like that runs for the office in the interim, serves one term, and then daddy comes back or mommy comes back and runs again and wins and serves two terms again. And that's just not really the spirit of the term limit. Because, okay, so you're term limited. This is my last term as a term limited public servant. Well, I am going to use my office now to fundraise for my wife, who's going to run for me in this next election cycle. And the show goes on and on. Well, how do you, I mean, do you see where this goes? Guys, ultimately, it's up to the voters to make that determination of who they want to serve, who they want to represent them, wherever it is. And I know the presidency and even the, well, look at the governor's office. Yes, term limited, but look how Wallace got around it. How many times did he run? So I understand the idea. I appreciate the mentality there, the justification, but I just think ultimately you want a legislative branch that could go toe-to-toe with an executive branch, and that's not just the head of it, not just the governor, not just the lieutenant governor, not just the president, not just the vice president, not just the cabinet, not just the AG or whatever, but every little single office of, like, you know, little power-hungry bureaucrats. You want a legislative branch that can get in there and mix it up. And I think it takes a little bit of experience, a little bit of knowledge of the system to really be formidable against that big thing we call the federal government. John asks, Chef Blight has a casino brought Biloxi. I because Biloxi, even before casinos, was always kind of nothing against Biloxi. It's pawn shops and, you know, dive bars or whatever. Casino gambling doesn't usher in like a, it's a vice. Now some places, obviously Las Vegas, obviously parts of the Mississippi Gulf Coast are far better off now than they were pre-casino gambling, but I think big picture wise, I don't know. You go to like Tunica or Greenville, Mississippi, or wherever, it doesn't necessarily translate into a game changer for your community. And in fact, I'd argue in some ways it brings other problems. It brings gambling addictions. Hey, why aren't you paying your rent? Well, I went to the craps table and dropped this month's rent. I mean, that happens. It's unfortunate. Gene, constitutional carry has become an issue in Missouri as it is now legal for minors to use AR-15 without adult supervision. Well, I mean, that doesn't sound like a constitutional carry issue. That sounds just like a gun. You need to be a certain age to carry a fire, to get a license, a permit, or whatever. In constitutional carry, you don't necessarily need it, but I think you can put in some prohibitions there, some guidelines.
More, much more than this, I did it.
251-343-0106. Still got a few texts we'll get to here in just a moment.
Yes,
stay tuned. This is the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But
to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Text us. John adds, just say it, Jeff. Term limits will destroy our democracy. I think they can be detrimental, guys. Look, in a perfect world, term limits would be absolutely appropriate for Washington, D.C., and draining the swamp. But this is not the government you see on Schoolhouse Rock. You have a very complicated executive branch, a behemoth. And the counter to that is judiciary and the legislative branches. As you learn, judicial has lifetime appointments, so what can you do there? It's that legislative branch that is the most directly accountable to the people. And, you know, would you want to box yourself out not having the most qualified guy to take on that bureaucracy with term limits? So the virtue of term limits, to me, is undermined by that argument. When the founders created this government we live under, they may not have intended to have lifetime or career politicians serving in Congress, but they certainly did not intend for the government, the federal government, that is, to do as much as they do and impact our life on a daily basis as much as they do. Let's see here, Tuskers. Worked for OHA, SSA years ago. You're correct, Jeff. Contact your representative, Sonny Callahan. Ripped SSA during the time. Was there for that. Yeah, well, I mean, and then Sonny Callahan had been, like, in D.C. long enough and had accumulated, like, enough knowledge, institutional knowledge of the system, and so had his staff that worked for him, to know how to navigate that bureaucracy that just did, you know, at times they just don't care. You're just, these people who put government on a pedestal, these wild-eyed idealists, don't understand it. Like, the people who run government don't always have the same, like emotional, spiritual mentality when it comes to serving the public. Go hang out at the DMV. Randy says, Jeff, you're kind of bouncing around different directions. You say you don't want term limits because it takes away the voter's decision, but you're against having casino gambling in your area because of what it brings to your neighborhood. Can't the voters decide on that, too? I also agree, no on term limits. But, Randy, I don't like, it's not direct democracy. Randy, do you think we should vote on everything that the government does? If the state of Alabama wants to build a new rest area, should we take that to the voters, too? If the state of Alabama wants to buy some new cars for state troopers, should we vote on that too? I mean, at what level do you want to vote on? Do you think you deserve a vote on whatever the government does? So what we do, Randy, is we elect elected representatives to do a lot of that for us. And what I tell you, Randy, and then I'm bouncing around here at all, if you want casino gambling, did you need to elect or you need to get out and work for or vote for or whatever a member of the Alabama legislature who supports gambling? And if yours already does, then maybe you need, I mean, there's a process here to get to that vote that you want to change the Alabama Constitution. It's not, you're not entitled to anything. You're not entitled to the right to vote for gambling. You're entitled to vote for somebody who may want to give you that opportunity, but you're not entitled to it. There's a big difference here. We agreed upon a constitutional government at the federal level. Well, we didn't agree on direct democracy at the state level. And there's a process you have to work through. And whoever tells you, like, or whatever I hear, well, I'm not necessarily for gambling, but I'm for giving the people the right to vote on it. You don't have a right to vote on it. It's a privilege bestowed upon you by the legislature to chase the Constitution of Alabama. May not like the system, but it's a system we live under. We can change the system if you don't like it. That's very complicated, but that's how it works.
Roger that portal.
251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
A wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her oh so far away.
You can't hide your lying eyes. And your smile is in disguise. I thought by now.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, utilize the text line. Joining us now, we do this every Monday from WVNN and Yellowhammer News, Dale Jackson. Dale, good morning. How are you?
I could not be better.
Well, did you get a good night's sleep?
I did. I had a wonderful night's sleep, and I'm very excited to be here.
Did you, are you rested for the Iowa caucus, the Hawkeye caucus?
I can't wait. I'm just so excited. I got all my snacks ready to go. I'm ready to roll. It's going to be super exciting. And man, I can't wait for Trump to blow these guys out by about 20 points.
Well, it looks like the media's descended upon Des Moines, Iowa. So I guess we're going to be glued to our seats tonight.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. They're going to tell us how cold it is. And that the people who live there, who live in this cold, are not going to operate because it's cold, because they think it's cold. So it's cold.
So tell me this, though. Well, if you could go speak on DeSantis' behalf at a caucus, what would that look? I mean, you wouldn't do that?
I mean, if they asked me to go and it would matter one bit, I don't know why they would care what some Alabama talk show host would think.
Well, I mean, but they do, like, you know, you get to give speeches and they have people speak on the campaign's behalf. And, you know, like, they need people up there speaking for their candidates before they vote.
Yeah, well, it better be Iowa people that people know, or people in their community that people know. It better not be random dudes from elsewhere. Look, here's what I would say. If I was speaking on DeSantis' behalf, I would point out a couple of things. One, Joe Biden is an absolute disaster and he must be stopped. And the simple fact of the matter is, Donald Trump failed to stop him once. By hook or by crook, Biden was able to sneak over the line. Two, look what happened with Vivek Ramaswamy the other day. Donald Trump has no loyalties to anyone, so no one should have any loyalties to him other than what benefits them at this particular moment in time. And right now, at this particular moment in time, it does not benefit Republicans to jump behind Donald Trump with both feet, because he is looking at a ton of legal issues and a ton of electability issues that none of the other candidates really have to deal with. And lastly, the argument I would make is that Donald Trump had multiple years to do all the things he's claiming he's going to do. And whether it's go after the deep state, which he could have done. Instead, he said, I'm not going to do any of those things, whether it was debt, deficit, or any of those other things. Then, no, he had those opportunities, and he chose not to. And then the things that he did do, he doesn't want to take credit for. COVID shutdowns and things of that nature. So, I think on almost every issue, the other candidates, especially DeSantis, are better than Donald Trump. So why would I vote for the guy who has a major personality problem that makes him almost unelectable to get weaker versions of the policies I want?
Did they just not make these cases? I mean, I think DeSantis will do better in Iowa than what this last minute 28-point lead that Trump has in the polls. It won't be 28 points. It might be double digits, but it may be in the teens at worst.
If it's not single digits, it's over. It's probably over.
I think this is probably it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
if it's double digits, DeSantis says goodbye. He has to. If it's not double digits, then he probably says goodbye after New Hampshire.
Well, what if he wins? How does that change it?
Oh, if he wins, then the whole game is changed. I mean, everything changes. You might as well throw everything out that's happened in New Hampshire and South Carolina and otherwise. It changes the inevitability argument, which is Donald Trump's best argument.
Do you have any hope of that happening?
I mean, I don't see how. I put a video out last night where everyone's talking about how cold it is and how that could hurt Donald Trump. And I'm just like, how? I've been dealing with his supporters for like 9 years.
Well, yeah.
What leads us to believe that they're the ones who are like, it's too cold, I'm not going out there. That is not their style.
That's what I was going to say. Like, it seems like it would help him, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Abso-freaking-lutely. I mean, if anything, this is playing right into Donald Trump's hands. I just think the stuff with Vivek Ramaswamy, I mean, it's so funny to watch some of the conservative media now all of a sudden be like, yeah, he's a Soros guy. I mean, don't you know? Come on, he's a Soros guy. What are you guys talking about? He's a Soros guy. It's like, what are you doing? Like, do you not think that people are going to remember the things you said? Like, this whole thing is so interesting. Everyone thinks they're Donald Trump, both his supporters and his detractors. They think they can do the stuff he does, and they can't. They just cannot. He is a different animal. And it's so very strange to see people like, yeah, Vivek is a Soros guy. He's not MAGA and he can't be trusted. It's like, well, weren't you saying like a little bit ago that he was great? And all of a sudden, no, he was Donald Trump's stand-in on the debate stage. And now he serves no purpose. So into the pile he goes. I mean, that's how this works. And I wish people would just be honest about what's happening. That's exactly what's going on here.
And if Trump should win again, Ramaswamy will be in the cabinet or something, right? I mean, he's okay,
enjoy your time as the Department of Transportation Secretary, Indian Buttigieg. I mean, that's basically what we're looking at here, right?
Right. But he's the Ben Carson of this cycle. Remember how bad Trump beat up on Ben Carson? And then he's his HUD secretary.
Yeah, and again, I wouldn't begrudge Ramaswamy for doing that. He's not the bad guy in that scenario. It's Trump. Trump's the bad guy in that scenario. And again, it's just it is a situation where it is solely 100% transactional. It's a transactional relationship. And, you know, look, Trump's put left the money on the table. Now get out of the room. And Ramaswamy's hung on just a little bit too long. And now Donald Trump has some critiques on his technique.
Well, let's talk about this. Big picture-wise, and you talk about having to deal with this for the last 9 years of Donald Trump. Why is it that, like, there's no takeaway here? Well, why are these people supporting Donald Trump? Maybe we could find something and we could take from that and we could figure out. I mean, obviously, like, the establishment lining up behind, like, a Nikki Haley. I mean, there's no, that's so tone deaf, right? Why does it ever result in like a lesson learned or something?
I don't know. How come Ron DeSantis wasn't talking like he's been talking the last 2 months from day one? Why wasn't he doing that? I mean, that's what he should have been doing. And he should have made himself out to be an adversary of Trump from the very beginning and let everyone get over it. Because this idea that, look, Donald Trump is awesome and you should vote for him. But if you're not, you should totally vote for me. I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, in no business does it work saying, hey, that other guy over there is better than me. But if you don't want to vote for him, you should vote for me. In no business is that ever going to work. And that's the campaign that Ramaswamy ran. And that's the campaign that DeSantis ran. Ramaswamy a little more pathetically. I would think that DeSantis did it a little more unnecessarily. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's embarrassing. And these guys are getting crushed because of it. And I'm sorry. If they'd have come out swinging from the very beginning, they could have been both the alternative candidate and the anti-Trump Republican candidate at the same time. And they decided they didn't want to do that because they didn't want Laura Loomer showing up and, her cosmetics, surgery melting off her face in front of them at dinner or something. It just... that they didn't want to get into that. So that's unfortunate for them, but enjoy your beatdown and go on and be Marco Rubio for the next 10 years.
You look at these things and you watch the people that try.
And I love Marco Rubio. I voted for Marco Rubio.
We remember that. The people that try to like beat Trump, they're too emotionally invested. They're not clear headed.
Not nearly as emotionally invested as the people that love him, and
that's not the point here. Let's just put Trump aside and just think of him as a target and not his supporters. But like the people, there's two things going on. They're too emotionally invested with like I hate Trump, and I think it clouds their judgment with tactics. Or they're just Trump's hired up all the good talent, I guess. And, you know, it seems like you got the B team playing here, and they're not going to beat the guys that Trump has surrounding him.
Well, they're surely not going to beat him by holding his hand and talking about how great he is, and that's the bigger
issue.
Right.
But the advice that DeSantis is getting was bad. He was being told this, and now, like you said, a 2-month stretch, like, crap, we're down by 40 points. Well, I better start swinging away. He should have been swinging away this time a year ago when you and I were like, when is he going to get in? Is he going to get in or not? Remember?
Yep. And we also were saying, when's he going to say something negative? Because, I mean, whether you agree with the guy or not politically with all of his strategies and stuff, you could stand up and say, look, his prescribed policy solutions sound great. He had 4 years and he didn't do them. So now I would like to do them and I can show you that my track record works. So let's do Donald Trump without all the negative baggage that costs us elections. I mean, that's the argument. And if that doesn't work, it doesn't work. And you know what? It still may not work. Trump has a stranglehold on Republicans in the same way Barack Obama would have had a stranglehold on Democrats if there had been Democrats trying to push back against Barack Obama. It's not that out of the norm for these guys to be beloved by their supporters and all this other stuff. That's normal stuff. It's just rarely do you have infighting coming from within the same party. So that's all that's about. And you know, he is again beloved by the people who love him in a way that will make them show up when it's negative 23.
Well, it's also this, Dale, you know, Trump's up by 40 points or whatever, depending on what poll you read. What has Donald Trump done from day one against his primary opponents? Maybe not a Ramaswamy until here lately, but from day one, it was the sanctimonious. It was just hammering.
He's
hammering.
Been slaughtering them.
Yeah. And then they don't slaughter him back.
Doesn't get a cool nickname.
That can be tricky, right?
Well, I'm just saying, I would call him Vivek the Snake. I mean, it rhymes. His name's actually Vivek, not Vivek. So Vivek the Snake, but he didn't even do that. I mean, that was just laying there. I mean, maybe that's too good of a slam. So, you know, he maybe could come up with one. But
I don't know a cultural component.
I'm sure there is, but it's like Donald Trump gives a crap about that.
It's like Macaca and Allen back in like 20 years ago or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, please, that would just help Donald Trump. And what's Ramaswamy going to do? Make a big deal about it in a Republican primary?
No, I don't think so. But I just the point was, like, look how Trump's been just swinging away and it's worked. And they're doing the opposite, and it clearly is not working.
I agree.
And the other thing is, this is like all of the blood, sweat, and tears of one former New Jersey governor, Chris Christie, who the only reason he was in was to try to swing away at Trump, and Trump's numbers have only gone up. Whoever was bankrolling that has to feel pretty terrible about their investment.
Alternate point of view, maybe it kept him down a little bit.
Yeah, but he didn't. It didn't do anything to Trump. I guess that was the point. He knew he wasn't going to be the nominee.
No. You're not listening. Maybe he'd have 70% if it wasn't for what Christie was doing.
Well, the trend was the other way. I just think the whole.
I'm just trying to give you a reason to write $1 million checks or something.
Yeah, so. Maybe so. Well, I feel pretty good about what we did. We got 3% in the. We never got higher than 3% in the polls.
Exactly.
Joined by Dale Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. Y'all need to check him out. Dale, the other thing I want to get you on here to talk about, I saw that you made a video about it, but the NEA going around and like kind of trumpeting the AEA in their success, quote unquote, last session. Meanwhile, the AEA has always downplayed its association with the NEA, but I think that's just kind of just doing it for the cameras or whatever.
I mean, maybe. I mean, look, here's the deal, though. They claim victories in all those situations that were referenced in that video, and you referenced them in 1819 News, or whoever wrote the story at 1819 News referenced them. They take those victory laps, and they rub it right in Alabama Republicans' faces, and Alabama Republicans say, give us money, please. Okay, cool. So weak school choice? Fine. Yeah, great. More raises? Okay, got that for you too. No accountability, no opportunity, pay raises. I mean, that's the NEA model, and the AEA, they say we won on that, and so good for them. So, yeah, I mean, I think the NEA said the AEA got big wins. The record says the AEA got big wins, and Alabama Republicans got donations.
Well, that's kind of it. The AEA is getting big wins, but they're probably being told, don't do... Try to keep your victory laps at a minimum, right?
Well, you can't do that when your best friend Josh Moon is out there saying, the AEA won the legislative session 2 years ago. I noticed that didn't happen last time, but well, it did happen 2 years ago. And you know, they mean it. They mean it. They did win. They won twice in a row. They're winning. They know it.
Speaking of Josh Moon real quick, I guess it was when Saban got to Tuscaloosa in 2006. He was still a sports columnist for the Montgomery Advertiser. This is before he was fired.
You mean when he had a real full-time job besides and, Bill Britt's, roller? Okay, good deal.
He wrote how Saban was like a media creation and was not going to last in Alabama. And it's just kind of like, how'd that work out? That didn't age well, did it?
No, well, you know, Josh Moon is as bad at his various jobs that he had a talk radio show for about 2 weeks one time. If that, he's as bad at doing his prescribed job as he is at picking best friends like when he picked you.
That's very, very hurtful, Dale. Anyway, hey, last question, and we'll wind it up on this. Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth was down here last week, at least in Fairhope, and said this, get ready. We're about to run over some Democrats at the very beginning of the session. And I was in Birmingham, just kind of talking around. Mixed reaction to that. Some say, well, you know, he didn't need to show his hand. Others saying, hey, that's a bad, bad look for a Republican supermajority to go around like that. What did you make of, or what would you make of Ainsworth's comments?
I mean, that's fine as long as they do it. I mean, if they don't do it, I have a problem with it. I'm not worried about it. I actually prefer the braggadocious side because then they have to back it up.
Dell Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, Dell, people want to find you at adultfeetfinder.com. How can they do so?
At the Dale Jackson, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. I'm also at yellowhammernews.com. You can find me there. Jeff, you got to go check out this video. I'm going to promote a singular video. I usually don't do this, but I'm going to do this. I did a video. I asked an AI program to write my bio for me. Go check that out on my Twitter and my Facebook. It is, it's something. It's something.
I can't wait. Dale Jackson, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Is my baby. I got a call in Alabama. So come on home to Louisiana. And come as fast as you can fly.
Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around.
He said, this is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama. As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, mister, many thanks. He said, you don't have to call me mister. The whole world called me Hank. He said,
welcome back to the Jeff Ford Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Still to come, Jerick Wilkins running for the 6th Congressional District has asked to come on beyond the next segment. And Vestavia Hills City Councilwoman also requested to come on, talk about the Iowa caucus. She's, I guess, a DeSantis surrogate of some sort, but happy to have both of them on. That's coming up in the next hour, as it is caucus day. And you'll want to say, like, where were you on caucus day 2024? Where were you on caucus day 2020 or 2016? Text here. Shouldn't we try to cut back on the federal government if that is the case? Absolutely. Talk about term limits and having a balance in government and why term limits would be detrimental to the balance you have. You should have a smaller federal government, but with this, I don't know how you get there. Tim tells me I'm dead wrong on term limits, but Tim does not tell me why I'm dead wrong. Is it this religious attachment you have to term limits? Tell me why I'm wrong. he'll just make statements like that. And then finally, unnamed texter, well, no Black Betty again today. We got to, like, calm down on the Black Betty there. Unnamed texter. Maybe we'll get it into rotation once or twice. We'll see. But no, it's under advisement. The Jeff Force Show Bumper Music Selection Committee only meets a few times a year. And then they take, they do take public suggestions. And trust me, guys, since I have opened this this can of worms here with the bumper music, I get lots of suggestions. Somebody the other night at the Feral Brewery event wanted me to include a Fleetwood Mac song in the bumper rotation. Those are, like I said, under advisement. We'll take a look at them, but you're not going to be able to rush the process here. No fast track with the Jeff Poor Show Bumper Music Selection Committee. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Jackson, behind my J-Pan
player. From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the show. Hit us up on that text line. Still to come. She is currently the city councilwoman for Vestavia Hills, Alabama, up near Birmingham, but is caucusing for, or not caucusing because she's not an Iowa resident, but supporting Ron DeSantis and is in Iowa and wanted to come on and talk about that experience. So that'll be coming up in about a half hour. Real quick, a couple of texts. Do not touch the bumper music. It is perfect. That from Buford. Well, thank you, Buford. KCC, good morning. I suggested this to you before. You listen to Willie Nelson's Bloody Mary Morton. I'm sure we all have them. Maybe I used to. I'm trying to get a. I like my heroes have always been cowboys. Monty, might I suggest Cut Fills by CCR as a viable choice for bumper music? And like I said, the Jeff Poor Show Bumper Music Advisory Committee meets only like once a year, and it's a very, very, very impromptu meeting. And you get all your suggestions in at just the right time. You might have a shot, but you got to get pretty lucky. One more text before we get our next guest. Good morning, Jeff. I listened to your interview with Representative Ainsworth about gambling. You mean Stringer, I think. It suddenly hit me that given the right referendum, the Alabama voters would overwhelmingly pass legal gambling. The state will not give a simple vote to have to or not to have it. They convolute the whole thing by trying to decide how the profits will be distributed. How about let us decide? We do not want any sort of gambling. How about just give us a chance to choose first, then we can work on how to divide the money's gain. I mean, it's just not going to happen. There are, as Senator Elliott has said, the flying monkeys will be dispatched to stop that, the special interest, if you will. Should it be that way? No. But the reality, Doug, is it is that way, that you don't get one without the other. And there's loyalties, and it is a very difficult system. And we're just like, well, why can't we just do this? And the reality is maybe you could in theory, but in practice, it's just, like I said, the powers that be won't allow it to happen. Anyway, enough of that. Joining us now on the line, you got to see him over the weekend on Saturday, a trip up to Birmingham, in a candidate forum. He's running for the 6th Congressional District Republican nomination. Jerick Wilkins joins us on the line. Jerick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. Enjoying being out in the district today and look forward to talking to you for a few minutes.
So, we had you on once before. You're running up that way. You're running up against a now five-term incumbent Gary Palmer. And my takeaway from the forum on Saturday, that a lot of this has to do with Congressman Palmer's term limit pledge that he is acknowledging that he is violating. And it's either some people just don't like people who violate pledges, I guess, and the others just really want term limits. But I give you an opportunity to do this. You didn't really get to articulate your answer fully on Saturday. You were interrupted, but kind of walk through us this, that what you take issue with and why.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. I appreciate that, and yeah, thanks for acknowledging the fact they did try to take my microphone away on Saturday, which I thought was kind of humorous in one regard and disappointing in another. But at the end of the day, term limits is what originally sent me down this path. When someone makes a promise, they need to keep that promise. It's one of the key reasons that I've supported Gary originally, because he made that commitment. No one asked him to do that. In fact, his opponent said he would not do that because he didn't want to limit himself. I feel so passionately, though, about term limits that I put action to words and just finished writing a book on Shackling Democracy, Embracing Term Limits, Empowering Citizens. And as I was doing the work and the research on that book, I came to the realization that our founding fathers never intended for us to have career politicians. They wanted people that were connected to the constituents. They wanted people who were part of the community, and they wanted them to go serve. And that's what Congress should be. It should be public service, not a lifelong career. When you look at all the problems we have in our country, most of them can be attributed to groupthink and lifelong career politicians. We need proven business leaders. We need educators. We need bankers. We need farmers to step up and take a break from their lives and go serve in Congress. And that's why I'm so passionate about term limits. And that's why I think it's key. But it's more than that. That's why I've also gone ahead and put together a plan to secure our border and to restore our economic prosperity. And these are things that we can do. And it's just about the point where I don't think Congress is doing a good job.
Well, let's talk about term limits. And you and I may differ, but let me explain to you why. I think in theory, term limits would be great. I think that you're exactly right. The founding fathers never intended to have career politicians serve in the Congress. However, the bureaucracy is not probably what they intended either. The executive branch, and it's more than just the president, it is the entire from the president all the way down to like a janitor at the Postal Service, probably never intended for the federal government to be such a big part of our lives. So my question to you would be this. Don't you think, and you can respond to this however you want, having that legislative branch, at least on some kind of footing where it could take on an entrenched bureaucracy that knows all the tricks of the trade, that knows how the system functions, is it important to have some experience, and maybe that comes with a long tenure in the Congress, dealing with that sort of balance that we need in our system that we don't get, because the third branch of government, judicial, lifetime appointments. So the one that's directly accountable to the people, the Congress, the term limit seems like it would hamstring that.
Yeah, and keep in mind, that's a common argument. I actually address some of those views in my book, but I think it's one of the things that President Ronald Reagan said when he talks about experience. He talks about the only experience that politics gives you is how to be political. And you look at what's going on in Washington and its dysfunction. And you're right. The bureaucracy is a mess. And that's why we need fighters to go in there and say, hey, we're going to dismantle the bureaucracy, because 2.2 million federal civilian employees, I mean, it's not good. We need to get rid of this bureaucracy. I had a conversation with Vivek Ramaswamy when he was in Birmingham just the last month before the presidential debate, and I talked to him about term limits, and he reiterated the fact that we need to term limit the bureaucracy in addition to talking about term limits for Congress, and I couldn't agree more. But for us to think that you got to have experience to get things done, I don't think that is all the case, and that's why we have some of the same problems. Because you look at the problems we have today, they're the same problems we were talking about a decade ago, and in some cases, 2 decades ago. And they keep trying to address them the same way. We need innovation. We need entrepreneurs that know how to get things done. You look at how successful things happen in the business world. It happens because of innovation and entrepreneurship. And we need new, fresh ideas to address our critical issues in our nation. And the same groupthink that's coming out of Washington is not where it needs to be. So I totally disagree with you on that aspect, that experience is what's important.
Well, it's not just experience. What about the stability in the system, having a high turnover? And these are all not necessarily my views, but views of others, that if you do this, that it really could like disrupt, like, and I know things in Washington seem chaotic and crazy, and then they're really letting us down. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But we do have a relatively stable situation in America. I mean, I know we got our problems, but we're not like Peru or Argentina or something.
Sure, but here's the thing. Before 1908, over 50% of your freshman class in over 50% of your Congress were freshmen. So it's important for us to know that our country has functioned this way in the past. Then you can also look at examples in state government that have term limits. Look at the state of Florida, for example, probably one of the most successful economies and legislative processes in the country, and they have enacted term limits. And there are other examples of that. So for us to say that it would distort things, I think that's just naive. I think it's entrepreneurship, innovation, fresh ideas, broad perspective, and it would also start to address one of the biggest issues, and that's the influence from special interests. Right now, the members of Congress have such an unfair advantage when they're running. That's why you see incumbents reelected at such a high percentage, because of the special interest that's involved with that. And term limits would help address those issues.
And last question on this, Derek, do you... What if you like your member of Congress and you're taking away someone's ability to vote for that person based on a term limit promise? I guess two questions really. In Florida, you mentioned that, but sometimes in Florida, this happens. You get a member serve 2 terms and then like a family member runs in that member's place for 1 term. And then that same person comes back and serves 2 more terms. I don't think that works against the spirit of the system. But if you just like your guy and you don't get the opportunity to vote for him, what do you say to that person?
Those are the same arguments that the Democrats used when we were passing the 22nd Amendment. And you look at the fact that Roosevelt was elected 4 times to the presidency. And if it's good for the executive branch, it's definitely good for the legislative branch. But we can see an example of where this comes into play just here in Alabama. So most of our incumbents, this is the first time they've actually had a challenger in several years. Now you go and look in District 2. There's no incumbent in that race, and we have 21 people across both parties running for that seat. And that provides options for the voters. When the incumbents get reelected at 97%, they come into the setting with a war chest in the millions. It's almost impossible to challenge an incumbent unless you're willing to put up your own money like I'm doing in this race, and like you're willing to have changes. Like this district has almost 40% of it new. So that's why this district is so unique in being able to challenge an incumbent. This is the first time that Gary's had opposition since he ran back against DeMarco in the runoff in 14.
Joined by Jerick Wilkins, who is running for the 6th Congressional District Republican nomination against Gary Palmer and Kimmy Feeders up in Birmingham. We'll kind of wind it down on this. I mean, you seem like how do you feel about going into March 5th so far? It is a new district somewhat. You got some Montgomery suburbs in it now. It's almost like running 2 races, it seems. You got your Birmingham audience and then your Montgomery audience. But how is that going today?
It's going great. In fact, I'm down in the southern part of the district this morning. We're actually shooting a new commercial we're rolling out in February. I've got support that we're seeing, and the conversations I'm having with the voters shows that they're ready for a change. They're tired of the status quo as usual in Washington. And we're seeing great momentum with our campaign. I'm excited to see what's going on. I can tell you I'm up and down 65, though, almost every day. And that's one of the reasons that I can see that we've got to prioritize an Alabama first infrastructure plan. We've got to get these highways widened. We've got to invest here instead of prioritizing Ukraine. And I think that we're going to see a really great turnout on March 5th and see some changes in Washington.
And real quick, you mentioned 65 and your opponent, the Northern Beltline in Birmingham. I don't know much if you discussed that. He's made that a big priority for him, and he thinks that will open up some opportunities or whatever. What is the, for that district, talk about your transportation priorities real quick.
Yeah, and again, I do find it interesting that he talks about the Northern Belt Line, and most of the funding came from a Biden program that he voted against, but that's neither here nor there. I do think we've got to prioritize projects in the state. I think 65 is a priority. We can look at some other infrastructure connecting 280 and 65, and we've also got to look at ways we can allow for further business investment. Like I mentioned over the weekend, we've got a huge supply of graphite in Alabama. And if we opened those resources up and started mining those resources and manufacturing them at home, we could see a huge economic boom, especially in the southern part of the district.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Hey, best of luck to you. We'll hear from you again on March 5th, but thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Have a great one.
Jerick Wilkins running into 6th Congressional District. We got to get a timeout here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Soon I'm wondering.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. Tim writes, Jeff, you should get Ricky and Dean Young to sing a song together and use it as a bumper music. Now, that sounds like some, like, real barbershop quartet kind of harmony. Well, it'd be a barbershop duo. Whatever. Maybe we can bring in a couple of others. Quinn Hillier and who else? Cameron Smith, Dean Young, and Ricky. Pat, we're one of two continental states without some form of gaming. Do the few that sing gaming is evil actually think that they are the majority? Oh, no, it's a vice. Cool. I live in Mobile and drive to Pascagoula or Baldwin and drive to Florida. This discussion is ridiculous. National average gambling addiction is 2.6%. The points you and others argue is a minute honest is just minute and honestly irrelevant. You ask every time schooling is in question why we're so far behind every yet over their state. And that has the same, you know, kids in testing. They're getting more funding, not teacher wages. We can't give kids a free blinking lunch because meanwhile, Ivy forgot to put it in the budget. Pat, so what if other states do it? Hey, I'm gonna go like use the biggest cliche or the biggest if all your little buddies go jump off a cliff, are you going to do that too, Pat? I don't care what other states are doing. It doesn't matter to me. The people want gambling, they can have gambling. They had to vote for it. And if their member of the legislature doesn't vote for it, then they need to vote them out of office. All I am telling you, and I can go either way on it. I'm not anti-gambling, but I am telling you, it is not free money out of the sky like you are making it out to be. Oh my gosh, we're going to get all this free money from gambling to put toward education so Johnny and Susie and Billy can have free lunches or whatever the hell it is that you want, Pat. It's not free money. It comes from somewhere. It's coming from somebody out of their pockets, out of their paycheck to go participate, and you want the state to condone that. You know what? If you want to gamble, Well, fine. Go to Florida or go to Mississippi. Go to Tennessee. Go to Georgia. Just because they do something doesn't mean we have to. We're leaving so much money and education on the table. So what? We have surpluses in our education budget every single year. How much more money do they need? The reason children aren't doing well in Alabama, I think, has more to do with the system than it does funding. Damn Yankee, how about a law that would not allow an incumbent to change parties after two terms? I think Damn Yankee had to leave something like that up to the parties to decide. The parties had to manage their, they are private organizations. And I don't think you should impose a law on them telling them who they can allow and who they shouldn't allow to join their party. I mean, we all have a certain right or a right to a free association, right? Unnamed texter, Jeff, I am just tuning in. I do not like gambling. We have enough crooks in Mobile and politicians, so I give them a chance to steal. Jeff, we do not know how we will handle gambling. Look at Mississippi. The people there do gamble the most, do not have money to be gambling. The reason it has failed in the past is people do not trust the government and the people with transparency issue. Yeah. Do we need to give government more money? Is that going to solve our problems? You just want gambling because you want to gamble. That's one thing. But don't come at me with we need to fund more government. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.